Good afternoon, everybody. Joe Beaumont here for the Tacoma Historical Society, and I've got another Grit City story. Today I'm joined by Kathy Runica, the self-appointed historian of Brown and Haley. You may know them for Almond Roca. She's also the director of marketing. How are you doing today, Kathy?
Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me on this, traditionally sunny, and by that I mean completely gray day over Tacoma.
It looks like a typical March day.
So it goes. But you know what makes these gray days better? Some delicious candy, which is what we are here to talk about this amazing day. So what is the deal with Brown and Haley? I've heard of, just moving here, I've heard of like candy wars. I've heard of crazy things that went down with the company. Like, where does it start? What happens?
So, it's an amazing story. Two individuals who had two unique skill sets coming together and creating some amazing things and being able to have those amazing things last multi-generational. For me, I am also Brown and Haley multi-generational in a fashion. My grandfather loved Almond Roca and always had it. And every tin became some sort of container out in the garage to hold nuts and bolts.
Pretty sure that's every household.
And then either buttons or nuts and bolts, that's what it was. So, and then my mother was the president of the Washington School Food Service Association for many years, and she would travel to different conferences, and she would always take Almond Roca with her, and people wouldn't always remember her name, but would remember that she brought Almond Roca. So she would say, "Oh, you're the Almond Roca lady." And then 15 years ago, I came to Brown and Haley and I interviewed, and 3 hours into my interview, they were very aware of my self-appointed title of company historian. And then recently, in the last couple of years, my daughter has begun working here as well. She works in our little outlet stores
over
in Tacoma. Yeah. So for me, it's much more than just Almond Roca. There's so much history within my family. And then the history of Brown and Haley itself is an amazing story, a huge journey. I mean, if you think about it, we're a 110-year-old company.
Oh, wow.
And we've survived multiple pandemics, a couple of world wars. And some of those things have actually helped us to expand our business or even, become a stronger company. So it's an amazing and rich story that we have.
Yeah, no, I'd love to, start at the beginning of all that. Just hearing that you guys grew out of these trials and tragedies and have lasted over a century, that's like almost as long as the city. So how did these two decide, Tacoma was a good candy spot?
Well, J.C. Haley and Harry Brown both had their own careers.
Okay.
Harry Brown was a candy maker. He was a confectionery master before they even met. And he had products and was selling them. And J.C. Haley was a businessman. He was a spice salesman. Mm-hmm. And they went to the same church. And they met at church. And they started talking. And they said, "Hey, you know what? If we join forces, you have these great ideas, and I understand what consumers need and, how to get out and expand." And so they joined forces in 1912. And at the time, every region had a confection house because we couldn't transport chocolate across the country.
Makes sense.
You think about this, but every area had a confection house that made everything. So Brown and Haley made candy canes and butterscotch drops and a myriad of candy bars and everything. And if you think today, fast forward to today, you think about a chocolate bar for a s'more, and you think you're going to the store to find a chocolate bar for a s'more, there's really only one plain chocolate bar, unless you get into some premium chocolates, where you're going to buy like a Lindt Excellent bar or something like that. There's a Hershey bar. And that's actually a more modern idea of being able to have, these mass brands. But before, it was your area. And for the Pacific Northwest, Brown and Haley was the confection house.
Yeah.
And that was because of J. J.C. Haley and Harry Brown's combination. They became the confection supplier for the entire area. And that started in this small little building that is now under where the May Museum was. And so that's where they started. And then in 1918, they bought the plant that we're in now. Okay. And that was a boot plant.
Oh, wow.
That was built somewhere between 1880 and 1890. And in the time that we bought it, 1980 till today, there has been 7 additions to that building and countless retrofitting. Lots of retrofitting. But there is still, the original building is still standing there. It's just been added onto, and there is still original brick, and there's still original wood beams from that building from back in the 1880s, 1890s.
That's awesome to have that tie back there.
It's a pretty amazing story. You know, not only have we lasted the time, but so has the building. And it's been, you know, it's been trials for the building as well. In the 70s, a train derailed into it, and it survived.
Just casual.
If we go back to Harry Brown and J.C. Haley, one of the candies that we still make now that was the earliest is the Mountain Bar. And so the Mountain Bar, originally the Mount Tacoma Bar, was created in 1915 and is still sold today. It was not long after that we changed it to the Mountain Bar, and we actually owned the registered trademark for the word mountain.
Wow.
That would not be possible today,
yeah.
But back in the early 1900s, we applied for it, and we got it.
There you go.
So it's a very nice little legacy to have.
And so on the regards to the Mountain Bar, I'm a relatively new citizen here, you know, in the Washington area. Apparently there's a lot of push and shove about whether it's everyone's favorite or everyone's, you know, least favorite, Brown and Haley. There's really no middle ground. Can you speak to that?
There is no middle ground, right? I'll have to say that I grew up, obviously, I've shared with you my history of the company, but I'm the last of 6 kids. And when we would take a trip to the little store in Tacoma, each of us kids got to take something. And I always picked the factory seconds. At the time, it was a tub. Now we sell them in pouches, but it was a factory second tub of cherry mountain bars.
Oh, that sounds
amazing.
And
it's still, of the mountain bars, it is still my favorite one.
Okay.
I have just caused a huge issue on your show because everybody's going to say, no, it's peanut butter.
I'm a peanut butter guy, I'm just saying, but I'll forgive you.
And then the other half of the room will say, no, she's right. There is, you know, it comes out of this. We were a confection house, and we made everything for any consumer. And the Mountain Bar is a product that is definitely built and created for a different consumer than what Almond Brook is made for.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you think about that. It's the Mountain Bar is a traditional kind of candy bar, where Almond Brook is this kind of premium, delectable toffee, individually wrapped in gold foil. They're totally different experiences, and they're totally different products. I absolutely can say that, you know, the Mountain Bar is a regional favorite.
Mm-hmm.
You move outside of Washington, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Northern California, people are like, what's a Mountain Bar? the same way they kind of do with Idaho Spud or Big Cherry or one of those, you know, nostalgia candies. And I mean, we had hundreds of others, but the Mountain Bar survived. And I think that says a lot about that product.
Okay.
It was created back in 1915, and here it is, 2022, and we're still selling that product. Some people will say it's different, and yeah, it is different. They used to be handmade, you know, the little fondant centers were scooped and they looked like a big mountain, and now they're made on a piece of equipment that makes them look a little more like Mount St. Helens, you know, like a little a little
post 1980,
like Mount Rainier, and a little more like Mount St. Helens. But and then people will also say, "Oh, they've gotten smaller." And what's funny about that statement? If you could, we have an archive of all the packaging. You go back.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
And the original ones were 1.2 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones we make today are 1.6 ounces. And I like to tell people who say they're smaller than they used to be. I said, no, your hands were smaller. you've grown up loving this candy. And so, you know, because I remember I would hold them with two hands, this tub of Factory Second Cherry Mountain Bars. I would hold one with two hands. And now, yeah, it fits in the palm of my hand now, you know. So
that's why I direct your mind. Yeah, you made that sound so poetic.
Your hand is smaller, the product is not, but it definitely looks different. And we did have to make one change to the product over the years. All chocolates are made of a lot of different things, and the old product had trans fats in it. And in the United States, no trans fats, you know, it's no trans fats under a certain percentage, and then you list. So the only thing that changed is we removed the trans fat and replaced it with a different fat butter system, so that but people will say, like, this is different. And those are the people who really knew the product, because in the 90s we did have to switch and move away from those trans fat chocolates. So but other than that, that product is phenomenal. You can't find it everywhere, so it is our number one selling item on all of our e-commerce platforms by far. And we sell a lot of them in the southern states, and I'm fairly certain it's folks who have become snowbirds or who are left these beautiful March days in our area to go to sunnier places, maybe. But,
snowbirds from here, it never gets cold here, but I'm a New Englander, so I have different definition I'm finding.
Yeah, for sure. But, so, you know, we fast forward from the mountain bar to 1923.
Okay.
And Harry Brown, in this crazy copper kettle, these toffees, English toffees, which, you know, is kind of this mistitling. It's like French fries, right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily English toffee, but that's what we call it.
Okay.
And the traditional method for making English toffee was you made it, you poured it out. You could put chocolate and nuts on it, but then you would hand break it into these chunks and you just put it in a box or a tin and you'd sell it that way. And it was, you know, lots of crumbs, lots of bits, lots of pieces everywhere. And it was more like a brittle.
Okay.
And then this amazing man, Harry Brown, said, I have an idea. And so he took the idea of how people would make caramel squares.
Yep.
Said, can I apply this to toffee? And so we actually have the original kettle that was created in. It sits in our Fife store kettle, and it's all dented up, and it's great. It's really great. It sits right next to Harry Brown's desk that is also in the space. But he created this item, and he slabbed it out, and then he took cutting wheels that you would use to cut caramel, and before the toffee got too cold, he cut it into these ribbons and then into these batons.
Mm-hmm.
And then he coated the entire thing in chocolate and then coated that in almonds to keep, you know, kind of the almonds stuck and you get more almonds this way. And what he always did with his confections when he created them was he would take them around town and he would share them with people. So what do you think? This was his method. And again, before his time, because there wasn't really consumer test studies being done back in the 20s. I mean, maybe, but not to any extent. But he would take it around town and he'd go into the bank and he would go in, you know, on his errands and things like that. And he took this product into the library, and there was a librarian there named Jacqueline Noel.
Mm-hmm.
And he let her try it. She goes, this is amazing. And he goes, what would you call it? And without missing a beat, she says, almond roca. Because at the time, almonds predominantly came from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Now they predominantly come from California.
Yeah.
but they came from Spain at that time. And the word roca in Spanish is the word rock. And hard candies at the time were rock candies.
Okay.
And so almond rock or almond roca became the name. And we are so thankful to Jacqueline Noel and to all the people who worked on this project back in 1923, because the word roca ended up being meaning more than rock in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Our second largest selling location for almond roca is Puja.
Oh, okay.
And the word roca in Cantonese, the symbol for ro is happy,
yep.
And ka is family. So roca means happy family in the Cantonese symbols. So did Jacqueline Noel know that back in 1923? Probably not, but you know, we're so happy with how it has turned out.
Yeah, so that is such a serendipitous amazing name.
Very much so. So much so, yes. And we find that the term roca actually has kind of become, you know, the generic name for toffees, especially mm-hmm. almond toffees. And so it is a constant effort, as it is with companies like Kleenex or Band-Aid, to let people know that, no, Band-Aid is ours.
Yep.
Kleenex is ours. You know, the generic term is facial tissue. We find constantly that people use the term roca for toffee products. So it is a bit of an effort to hold on to that legacy and that piece. We also coined the term buttercrunch.
Oh, yeah.
One word, buttercrunch. and that one we let anybody use because it so well describes what a toffee that's made with actual butter
mm-hmm.
is. There is a big difference between, you know, your standard mass-produced toffees that are made with vegetable oils or other fat systems yeah. other than just pure butter, and ones that are using corn syrup versus sugar. There's a different texture, there's a different taste, but we're all kind of categorized. But there is a huge difference. It's amazing because if you taste almond roca versus any other toffee that's on the market, there's a lot of really good ones out there. There's always this one distinct thing that's different, which is we can have a really thick piece,
mm-hmm.
You know, almost a half inch thick, and when you bite through it, it pops apart. It actually cracks apart.
Yeah.
And that was the secret that Harry Brown created when he was cooking it in the kettle. He
okay.
found this one step in the cooking process that would allow us to do that. And so because of that, we still produce one kettle at a time.
Oh, that's incredible.
Now we have a lot of kettles. We have a lot of kettles to keep up with demand. Today we actually have a new line. It was installed in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
We were down for 6 weeks, the plant was, and they craned all the new equipment into our building. And we are producing over 3 million pieces of roca every single day.
That's insane, especially having, you know, driven past the building. I can't imagine millions of something coming out every day.
Over 3 million pieces of roca. And that's only one of many lines that we have in our facility. We only have one line in the entire world that makes almond roca.
Huh.
And almond is sold in over 65 countries.
Dang. That is impressive. So, impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And every piece comes right out of Tacoma. So, you know, it's pretty amazing that this idea of making something in this little copper kettle back
yeah.
in 1923. You fast forward, you know, next year will be the 100 years of almond roca, and we're making over 3 million pieces every day, and half of that is being shipped to other countries outside.
So you guys just celebrated, you know, 110 years in general, and you're about to celebrate 100 years for almond roca. Do you guys just have like a big birthday bash for every candy that comes off the line at this point? Because we're about that.
It is a bit of a daily celebration, for sure. But yeah, You know, it's so funny. There's, because of the longevity of the company, there is constantly celebrations. You know, it is a bit humorous. You're so much like a family.
Yeah.
All of us who work here, there's birthday parties every month, you know, like you really do. It's, you think about, you know, the Willy Wonka,
yep.
Right? And, there is so much truth to that kind of happiness that's happening, in our facilities. It's fun. It's, you know, pun intended, it is a very sweet job to have. And, you know, the perks, you can eat what you make, you know, so it's fantastic.
Oh, that sounds great. So yeah, you guys, you know, company was born, you make it through a world war, a pandemic, Great Depression. And then does, like, World War II kind of kickstart you? Or, like, how's that work?
You think about these 65-plus countries that you can find Alvin Roque in, and that happened because of World War II.
Oh, yeah.
So, during World War II, we're very well-placed. It's like the word Roca. You know, it's kind of, you know, being lucky, but being smart about that luck.
Yeah.
We're close to the naval base. We're close to, you know, the military bases right here. And we always kind of supported them. And Harry Brown and J.C. Haley were constantly, first and foremost, providing service to the community was the objective. And so we had very good relationships already with the commissary kind of businesses that we based. And World War II hit, and we were sending ships overseas, and we were the first company in 1928 to put candy into a sealed tin. So they were doing it with vegetables and with meat. They were putting a tin, and there happened to be a tinning facility really close to our plant. And so we said, what if we put our candy in there? What would happen? And so they did. And what that meant was, is during World War II, our candy could ship and not have any worries about spoilage, infestation, damage. And so we ended up with a military contract to make Alvin Roca for our militaries. And at that time, a lot of people were having sugar rations and butter rations.
Yeah.
And that's the two large components of Alvin Roca.
Just a little bit.
We had government contracts for those ingredients, which helped us survive through this, you know, very tragic time in history. But what ended up happening was, is that soldiers had these tins of candy that they were taking with them, and they used some for morale, you know, some for self-consumption. But a large part of them were used as barter. So they would land in China, and they would trade Alvin Roca canisters for meat, fruit, cheese, vegetables, these perishable things that couldn't travel. It was during that time that a tagline got given to us that was the candy that travels. And the people of Asia were now exposed to this confection.
Yep.
And they loved it, and they wanted it post-war. And so we started exporting to Asia. So our first exporters were our military soldiers, and it just grew and grew and grew and grew. And it's amazing. Our biggest holiday is Christmas, and our second largest holiday is Lunar New Year.
Interesting.
And unfortunately for us, they all ship at the same time, because if you're shipping for December shipments in the U.S., you're shipping around October, you know, September. And if you're shipping for Lunar New Year over in Asia, that's happening in January or February, it takes an extra 4 to 6 weeks to get there. So you're shipping the same exact time. So we definitely have a very, very busy shipping season.
Yes, around. Crazy time of year for fall for you guys.
Yeah. Yes. But you know, it's an amazing story to think, you know, that period of time during the 40s, we have this huge push, and then it's shortly thereafter that the company is, you know, J.C. Haney and Harry Brown are of an age that they're thinking about retiring and handing the company down. And how do you do that, right? Now you have multiple descendants and two families, and how to do that. And they had a clause in their original articles of incorporation that one could buy out the other.
Okay.
And I think it was, you know, it was a sad day for both sides because it was this, you know, dissolving of this partnership that had lasted this many decades up to that point in time. So it ended up, there was some back and forth and whatnot, but it ended up that the J.C. Haley bought out Harry Brown.
Okay.
I think it's important to note because there's a lot of stories of, like, you know, is there bad blood? Is there that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at every single piece of packaging that we have, every single piece of packaging we have says Brown.
That's fair.
And a few years back, the Brown family came to our facility for a family reunion, and we toured the warehouse, and they shared amazing stories, some of them of when they were kids and playing at the factory. And
the best playground ever.
Right. And then I think it's really, really important to understand that both J.C. Haley and Harry Brown had this kind of idea of, like, community first and service first and take care of your employees. And we have a motto that we say now, which is do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very generic, but we apply it to everything we do. So, you know, we just launched a whole new line of Roka products.
Yeah.
And when we're launching that new line of products, we say to ourselves, okay, what can we do? What can we do with this product that is more? And, you know, Harry Brown and J.C. Haley, they've helped with war efforts, and they sponsored school, you know, improvements. They helped with the PLU library, when the PLU library took place, and every year they re-meet on that, and they reach out to us and want mountain bars, because they all got, all the students who helped to carry books over got mountain bars, right, to help them do that back when, and so we recreate that each year for the celebration, and try and get the mountain bars for it. But the new product, you know, the world is much smaller now.
Mm-hmm.
Than it was back in the 40s. And so one of the things that we decided to do was look at ways that we could, with the products that we make, how can we do more? And so we partnered, the new product is Roka Bites, which is identical to Almond Roka, but it's smaller. It's a bite size. There's not that foil wrap. You can eat it while you're, you know, running errands and things like that, because we're all so busy now, you know, that it's, you know, Almond Roka is really that traditional celebratory sharing kind of product, and this is really, you know, that I'm busy but I still want my Roka, you know, kind of thing.
Little celebrations so throughout the day.
Yeah, little celebrations every moment. But we partner with Cocoa Horizons, and they're a independent organization that actually has boots on the ground in cocoa farming communities in West Africa, like Ghana and places like that. What they do is they go in and they help those cocoa farmers to get better yields out of their crops. They show them and train them how to cultivate the land, how to expand their crops, how to not just rely on cocoa only for the stability of their communities, because these communities definitely run in a symbiotic nature where, like, you know, they all rely on each other to have the village or the community eat, you know, to have water, you know. And so what happens is if a cocoa farmer decides that he wants to take this education, he can do that. He can still sell his cocoa beans to anybody he wants. But if he follows the rules that are laid out, the guidelines that are set out by Cocoa Horizons, he can then sell his cocoa beans for more money.
Okay.
Which then That's means cool. that for the amount that he's getting, that he's producing, he can bring more income in. And those guidelines are is that they cannot expand into rainforest. So they can't take down rainforest to expand their crops. Instead, they're given tools and skills so that they can double or even triple the crops that they currently have by not damaging their trees, and being given tools that allow them to harvest in a way that gets them more cocoa pods. They cannot have child or slave labor.
Very good
which,
thing.
You know, that's a very good thing. But, you know, there's always that question of, like, well, you know, how do we balance that? These communities rely so heavily on those kinds of things. And it's that symbiotic, don't just make cocoa. Expand what you're doing into other things. So Cocoa Horizons, although the name sounds like Cocoa Horizons, it's more than just producing cocoa. It's helping these communities diversify. So if the weather is bad one year and the yield is small, they have other sources of income. So it's definitely working in each community and determining what resources they have and how best to improve the chances of that community surviving through a bad season, or you know, providing opportunities for children or even adults to further their education. All of those things are part of the Cocoa Horizons program. And so we, every bag that we produce has a certain amount of chocolate in it. And that chocolate has a certain percentage that is going directly to those cocoa farmers.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of other things you can do out there. You can get fair trade. Do a lot of these certifications, but the thing with Cocoa Horizons is when we ask the question, you know, do the right thing, are we doing the right thing? This one directly goes to those communities, which is exactly what Harry Brown and J.C. Haley talked about, you know, is help the community. If the community is strong, we will be strong.
Yeah.
And like I said, the world is much smaller now, so our community is beyond beyond our state, beyond our country, you know. So we're very proud of that. And, you know, it's another thing is the new packaging has a lot of little call-outs on them, too. And one of them is gluten-free. He's like, you made Almond Roca gluten-free? And I'm like, well, it's been gluten-free since 1923,
yeah,
so it's another one of those things that it's we were ahead of our time. Yeah, I mean, it's such a part of Tacoma. You know, we've had conversations in the past of, like, do we move out of Tacoma? You know, do we go to these places? We're in a really good location. The port of Tacoma is so close, you know, that we have the ability to ship, you know, half of our products made here in Tacoma to other countries and bring revenue into our country from other, you know, other countries. So all of these little things, it has taken us 110 years to get to this point, but it's one of those things that we're constantly evolving, but also staying in check to the root purpose, which is, you know, do the right thing. Could we change roca and make it cheaper? Yeah, we could put corn syrup instead of sugar. Will we? No. you know, we are brand stewards at this point in time. It's lived generations before us, and it'll live generations after us, and so we better not mess with it. That's kind of the way we look at it.
That's an awesome anchor to have. awesome, you know, credentials to rely on. Just a century of work.
Yeah, you know, it's taken us a little bit of time, but you work at it when you get there.
So you kind of cover the initial days, the absolute boom of the company, and just kind of the, like, way ahead. Is there any, you know, I'll say comedic or quirky anecdotes you have about the company that, you know, you can publicly release?
There's a lot. Are you kidding me? comedic? Oh, boy. Well, you know, we have created some weird things that never have hit market before. There is some really fun ones that we have tried. We tried an orange roca.
Okay.
That was an interesting one. So if you think of, like, the orange sticks covered in chocolate, somebody said, hey, could we do that to roca? We've tried a sesame roca. Also very interesting. Not all ingredients are created equal. I would say probably one of the funnest little details that I love to share with people is our little store over in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that little tiny round candy store that has a history all on its own.
Okay.
What a lot of people don't know is that was a ticket and souvenir booth at the World's Fair in Seattle.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So there was two of them, and we purchased one when the World's Fair was over, and it got put on a truck and moved down to Seattle and placed in its spot. And then we bought this big roca tin and put it on the top, spinning around. But when they were filming, it happened at the World's Fair with Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
They had to have a place for him to have his green room, take his breaks, etc. So they converted that little store, at the time the ticket booth, into a green room.
Okay.
That Elvis Presley used while he was filming there. So we have a cute little thing that we say, Elvis was in the building. obviously, you know, it's been many years since the World's Fair, and that little store, the amount of traffic that has come through that little store in all those years, and it's where I went when I was a kid to get my little tub of Cherry Mountain bars.
Yeah.
So the building has history. The product has history. Even our little store has history. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
I would say we could sit here for another 3 hours talking about what we refer to as roca stories. It doesn't matter where I go or who I talk to. I am always amazed by the willingness of people to share their stories of their experiences, their traditions, their memories of our product, and how far back it goes. It really is an honor for me to get to share these stories with, you know, folks like you, so that you can share them with other people as well. But it really is, I love my job. Not too many people in this world who can say that, but every morning I get up and I look forward. Some days are harder than other days, but I work for a 110-year-old candy company that makes a product that is internationally known, and we're still homegrown.
Yeah.
We still have that small business mentality, and we also like to say that we take the words Tacoma, Washington, more places than anybody else, because it's printed on every single thing we produce.
Giving a much sweeter sound to Tacoma? Yeah? No?
Yeah.
Maybe? I'll take a pump.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much for your time. For my listeners out there, that was Kathy Renica, the historian, self-appointed, but we'll say it's real after this, of Brown and Haley and Director of Marketing. And for those of you who don't know, that company is just a legacy of support, not just locally in Tacoma, but around the globe, with great taste, I might add. And
we think so.
Of course, of course. So Kathy, again, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And I'm Joe Boma. That was another Grit City story.